It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Welcome in to what I like to call the Hour of Fun. It's our San Diego Roundtable Pizza, 97.3 The Fan.
You like Padres to call it that, isn't
roundtable.
It?
Are we having fun yet?
The Hour of Fun.
All right, so I've had a long day yesterday, but we're here. I put together a plan, and now I'm throwing it out the window based on what's happened right at the end of our own show this morning, and that was the topic that Woods thought I was a monster.
No, I don't. I don't think you're a monster.
So I need to get this opinion right away.
You're a monster.
When you go to the ballpark, do you clean up after yourself when you sit in the stands, or do you just leave all the trash under the seat at the end of the game?
Yeah.
I just leave it all under the seat. I figure they're all coming to do it anyway.
This is
when I'm in the press box, I do my best to take as much trash from my area.
Box. Press box is different.
Oh, the press box is special.
No, I try to throw it away.
How many of us have their own personal seat in the press box? Anyone? Craig?
No, I have a staff seat.
Oh, wait. She's got her own personal seat.
You got your name on yours.
So she's got to clean up because otherwise we'll know that it's there.
A hot dog wrapper. It's not like there's a trash can at the end of the aisle.
There's a trash can at the top of the stairs.
I'm not carrying it all the way up.
This is not an argument. Ben is way in the majority here. Most people who go and throw their peanut shells down
peanut
on the ground
sure.
in a box,
there's nothing you can do about
but
that.
you don't pick up your stuff and take it with you when you leave a ball game.
I don't
you
pack
leave
out.
What? It's the same in a movie theater, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
90% of the people just leave their popcorn boxes and sodas right there when they get up and leave.
Woods, this is part
Woods,
of the
you're the only
ticket,
guy that picks up and
least.
Cleans up. What do you think that kid goes in there between movies to do?
Now,
he has to clean up after people like me.
Now, I'm from Texas, but you guys were born in a barn. Like, you guys don't clean up after yourself at a ball. I bring two kids to the game. There's crap everywhere. I pick up the mustard wrapper, everything, and we lug it up to the top. We throw it in the garbage because
Hannah sorts it into the recycling bin part.
Right? Yeah. I mean, whatever. Like we take our stuff up and toss it.
You leave your tip for the stadium cleaners.
I do not leave a tip. No, I do not. But I would if they had
an option. He probably would.
Do you notice? Okay, let me ask you this: do you notice anyone around you doing the same thing?
I don't pay attention
no,
to
not.
That.
I'm just. They've already left.
I clean my side of the street here.
They've
I can't
already
believe
left,
it.
Woodsy. You're a terrific guy. I'm not trying
I'm blown
to knock
away.
You.
I'm blown
but
away.
You're in the minority here.
Man, leaving messes behind.
All right.
The San Diego Padres way.
There's 3 minutes of the hour killed right there. Let's move on now to the San Diego Padres.
Well, that's the first inning stretch.
Yeah.
Very tough road trip. Ended on a high note with a win
talking
over
trash
the Phillies.
Is better than talking about this team right now, Ben.
I said last week, 7 days ago, we were all riding a fairly, high after a sweep of the Oakland A's. I said, probably going to sound completely different a week from now. And, of course, it sounds completely different. So, first question is, what cracks, if any, did the most recent road trip for the San Diego Padres expose, Chris, that you saw?
Two, but the one is the same. I mean, they still can't hit a left-handed pitcher, but that hasn't changed. It's the statistic is now up to 22 consecutive left-handed starters have held them under 3 earned runs, and 17 of those have held them to 1 or 0. So I just think that's remarkable, but that is what it is. I don't know how it's going to change. The other thing is that something I said a few weeks ago. They've been without Darvish. They've been without Musgrove. They've been without Bogarts. They've had injuries in along that. I don't think there's a lot of teams that can sustain their best play without their best players. So I don't want to say it shows a lack of depth. It just proves that it's really difficult to win without everybody you have.
Annie, for a while, the Padres actually lost Joe Musgrove, lost Yu Darvish, and the pitching staff was doing great, even better for a while. I do feel like in the last week we've finally seen that lack of depth come back to haunt the Padres a little bit.
I would agree. I think that you're finally starting to see it, and credit to them, I guess, for kind of keeping it rolling as long as they did by filling in on those substitutions. But you're starting to see it offensively and defensively. But at the same time, I was reading this morning about the Orioles, who now three of their starting pitchers – three are going to have Tommy John surgery, with the latest one coming this week. And even with the two of them out before the season started, they've sustained a starting rotation that's right up there with the best in the league and a 3.03 ERA. So I think that, yes, you know, you it's hard to sustain that when you lose your best guys, but I do think it's also happening all around the league.
Well, and that too, and coupled, it's easier to sustain when you have an offense that can pick you up. Yeah. And like the Dodgers are a great example, and they have an offense that can pick up their rash of starting pitcher injuries. It's kind of come back to hurt them a little bit, but not. They built such a huge cushion against the Padres. They could fall down, break their legs. They're going to be fine. I mean, nobody's catching them right now. Nobody's playing well enough to catch them. The offense for me it continues to be a crack. You know, and we've all heard about batting average and all that, but there's a lot of holes on this team. And again, to beat the dead horse, you know, the superstars. Not playing like superstars has killed this team all season.
Craig, is it the same cracks that we're just seeing cause more trouble, or are you seeing anything new and troubling from the Padres?
No, I think this is a team that's distressed right now. And you know, that comment you had about the Orioles there, Annie, is like rattling in my head a little bit, because Baltimore last year chose not to trade any of their depth out of their minor leagues in order to improve a 100-win team. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. They didn't do anything to move any of their minor league depth this offseason to improve their team. They're a great team. They're going at it one way, right? The Padres go at it a different way. We've got the depth that we've got. We've traded the players we've had in order to create the roster we do. And that roster right now is a roster that's distressed. You have 3 out of 5 starting rotation spots completely leaking oil in Vasquez, Major, and Cease, who has been very bad for 7 starts consistently, ERA well over 6 in that time. You've got players out or playing hurt. And right now you look at the list of the top players on this team, Machado's playing hurt, Tatis is playing hurt, Bogarts is out, Arise is playing hurt.
Profar as well.
Profar is playing hurt. So add it all up, this team is losing right now in what I would call a predictable fashion.
Let's talk about the moment that happened on Sunday that was featured in a John Boy lip-reading video of manager Mike Shildt almost politely asking to get ejected from the game after Manny got tossed, very frustrated, you know, pitch out of the zone, but just expressed some of that frustration. Mike Shildt comes and says, you know, I need you to throw me out of the game, but doesn't really get hot under the collar until he finally, you know, gets the heave-ho, Chris. Do you have any problem with the way Mike Shildt handled that situation?
On the surface, it seems like I should have a problem with it, but I didn't. The only thing that concerns me, just a tiny bit, is if the video gets back to the Padre players, which I am assuming it will, because sure, we've all seen it, they'll all see it, it could be construed as, you know, he really didn't want to stick up for me if I'm Manny Machado. Like, he didn't want to do anything. He's only doing it because that's what baseball says he should do. So if the attitude of a player is that, then the video could be a little problematic, because it's very clear that Mike Shildt almost goes out there and says, you know, my player was kind of stupid for getting thrown out, so now I have to get thrown out too. And if it's looked at upon in that regard, I could see that ruffling a feather or two, but for the most part, no. I mean, managers, I think, go out and ask to get thrown out all the time. They just usually wave their arms a little bit, which he did not do.
Do the dance.
Woods, yeah. You kind of alluded to it during our show, that maybe Mike Shildt can get away with that. Had Jace Tingler done that, it might have been more of a problem for an inexperienced rookie manager to do something like that.
Well, and I think the player in question as well has a lot to do with it too. And I really don't think Manny would care either way if he went out and kicked dirt and threw his hat. And I'm if there's one thing I'm pretty sure the players know, is that Mike Shildt has their back. I'm pretty sure.
He seems to like this team.
I'm pretty sure they know he's on their side and is rooting for them very, very hard. Somebody made the point, and I talked about it on our show, you can do that. Just don't get caught doing that. Like, you do the dance. I mean, do the dance. If you're going to do it and you're going to wear it, I would have done the dance. No question, I would have done the dance and kicked the dirt and everything. And he did say now you did miss that call. You missed that specific pitch to Manny, but I do need you to throw me out of the game here. I call him Country Ben. He's very positive, but he reminds me of how Ben probably would have
handled. He's a monster, you said earlier.
Well, he just doesn't clean up after himself. A trail of trash in his wake.
Woods uses the phrase, Craig, I wash a lot. And going out and stomping and kicking dirt is just as much, yes, eyewash as anything else. And I think players do know that.
Oh, yeah.
All umpires miss calls. It's frustrating. A manager losing his mind over it is a show. It's theater. And right. Mike Schilt just didn't want to play that game. He didn't want to play his role that day.
Do you guys all, do you think Aaron Boone's ejections, every time he does it, do you think the Yankees like, oh, yes, he did it again. He's got our back. Like, we talked to his brother who said, I've called Aaron before and said, enough. We get it. You love your team. You respect them. They're warriors. They're battling in the box. We all know it. Enough already. Like, does it start to lose momentum after you do it once a week?
He did it all season last year, and it did not help them get to the playoffs.
Not a damn thing.
No, and, you know, Chris said it exactly right. The only potential fallout of this is if Manny says to someone in the clubhouse, that sucked, essentially. But John Boy exposing the kabuki theater that is the manager and the umpire yelling. I mean, I remember an old commercial when I was a kid of, the manager and the umpire both turning their caps
around.
Being like, where are you going for dinner tonight?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go for a steak.
That sounds good.
Yeah. All right.
What was that, by the way? I love that.
Right? So, like, it's been this way forever. Mike just did it in such a silly, folksy way. And John Boy owned him. I mean, what are you going to do?
Annie, you've covered Manny Machado for many years. If there's one player who doesn't care about eyewash, who only cares about, is this going to help my performance and my team's performance? And that goes all the way down to the, effort he puts into running at first base. It's Manny who doesn't care about the eyewash of the game at all.
I don't think Manny had a problem with this. And I don't think Manny has a problem with how Mike Schilt handled it. I don't think Mike Schilt has a problem with it. He might choose a different strategy next time, I do believe. I don't believe he will use that same strategy down the road. Probably never thought it would get broken down in a John Boy video. But he called that last pitch to Manny a horse-ess, pitch or whatever. And the fact about him saying, but you guys do a good job and all that, yeah. Mike Schilt respects the game. Like, he grew up around baseball since he was 8 years old. Yep. He respects umpires. He likes what they eat. I don't think he wanted to go out there and be like, I hate you guys and all that. But 100% it's eyewash, yes.
Simple solution. Just like pitching coaches and pitchers when they go out to the mound, when you go and argue, you're just going to have to put your hand in front of your face.
The worst umpire I've ever seen, ever.
Every manager now is going to think to themselves, oh, man, is John Boy going to break this one down?
No doubt.
Speaking of hiding what's going on, there was a video that came out of the Phillies basically signaling to home plate when Matt Waldron was pitching. A knuckleball's coming. You could see they put their arms straight out if they'd look in and could see the knuckleball grip. So the Phillies, at least when there was a runner at second, knew that knuckleball was coming, still couldn't hit it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that, Annie, I'll start with you this time. Is that an ethical part of baseball to do that?
Yes, I think that is baseball. You find whatever competitive edge you can find. If you have a little, you see a little tip or you see a little quirk or you see a pitcher is showing a tendency and you're able to relay that to your hitter or relay that to your guys, that's part of it. That's what, it's a legal part of it.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best part of the game. This I love that.
This differentiates from what the Astros did because there's no technology involved. That's the big difference.
Anything on the field, this is a story as old as time.
Fair game.
Finding a tell, finding a tip, deciphering the third base coaches, signals, all of that is fair game as long as you're not using video, et cetera.
I'd like to ask the former Major League hitter among us about – Tony's not here today.
Not me.
We miss you, man. Aren't there some hitters, though, that wouldn't want to know?
Yes.
Because the Phillies didn't look like it helped them too much.
Didn't
they
help
were
them.
Flailing. Yeah. Not only were they flailing, they took several strike threes, which would tell me that they didn't know what was coming or the message wasn't getting relayed very effectively.
I mean, it must be fun to be Matt Waldron and have a pitch that's so tough now that they can know it's coming. I mean,
it's
heard the comments of Jazz Chisholm this week saying, I think it's the best pitch I've ever seen in baseball. In baseball.
Bryson Stott. did you see Bryson Stott's comments? He said, look, the one hit Boehm before I came up, then he threw the exact same pitch to me, and it dropped in the strike zone. He goes, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So that's,
nasty.
Terrific.
Craig, we're all in the Waldron cauldron now. You were the first.
Well
now we're
done,
all
sir.
In the
well done,
cauldron.
Sir. Take your victory lap.
He's embraced it himself. He deserves, obviously, I looked at this analytically as the starter out of the grouping of Vasquez, Brito, Waldron that had the best chance to be successful. And maybe that didn't comport with people's ideas coming over with the trades. Now that you've seen all three guys pitch, come on, it's obvious. Matt Waldron is a really solid pitcher. The real question is, just how good is he now? Because he is pitching at the level of like the upper 10, upper 15% of starters in the National League right now. And it's one of those thin tent poles that's kept the Padres aloft this year is here's Matt Waldron, a guy that you were counting on to pitch to a 4.8 ERA, pitching to a mid three or low three ERA.
We looked at it. We were at the golf tournament yesterday. Game was on in the bar inside, but you could see it through the open windows. And Ben walks up and he goes, it's the seventh. He goes, oh my God, Waldron's still in. I go, yeah. I mean, he is the guy. He's your game one starter right now. And I don't think it's particularly close.
He was the first pitcher all year to go seven innings against the Phillies and limit them to one earned run.
Insane.
The first all year.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Jackson Merrill was talking after the game yesterday, too, and said the clubhouse is so happy for him. Nice guy, always working with the hitters, trying to help them as well, whether he's pitching that day or not, and just said, look, this clubhouse is elated for this guy. That's
awesome.
Cool.
Good
yeah.
Dude. Yeah.
It's our 97.3 The Padres Roundtable and the Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. I don't think I introduced everybody. Probably know everybody by
now. I think
we
got it.
Annie Halbrun, Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Chris Ello. I'm Ben Higgins. Let's go back to Manny for a second. Some of his most, I wanted to say, vulnerable comments I've ever heard from Manny this week in separate pieces in the UT with Kevin Acey and AJ Cassavell at MLB.com, really expressing how frustrated, how difficult this season has been for him and how he has struggled to get back his form from pre-elbow surgery. Chris, what do you take out of those comments from Manny? Do you feel like he's further away? Are you encouraged by the fact that, you know, he still feels like I'm going to get that slot at some point? It just don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting because Manny's always been able to say, look at the back of my bubblegum card and this is going to happen. But when he slammed his bat down, you know, on Sunday before he got thrown out, I thought that's kind of where you could tell the frustration had reached its zenith. I mean, he's really, you know, scuffling. And it's amazing because this game does it to everyone, I think. And now, you know, Manny is even going through it. I don't think it means one way or another. He needs to hit a couple of balls solid and, you know, maybe get a little confidence back. I mean, I hate to say a guy like Manny Machado's a little low on confidence right now, but I think he is. And I don't think the elbow is going to go away. And I don't know that the hip injury is going to – maybe that'll get a little better. So he's got to do with what he has and maybe hit more line drives, doubles. I mean, the home runs aren't there. So he's got to find a way to help this team. And I was thinking, you know, do we drop him in the batting order? And I just don't think you can drop a Manny Machado in the batting order. I mean, you know, Hank Aaron didn't bat seventh. I mean, he's the best slugger you have. I can't drop him. He's just got to start helping this team in other ways.
Annie, I kind of like the comments, seeing them from Manny. Normally, he's so water off a duck's back. Yeah. Everything's going to be fine. I'll put my numbers up. To actually see that frustration, almost like, okay, I'm not crazy. What I'm seeing is actually real struggles. Did you get any of that sense?
Absolutely. I mean, he's a super calm guy. He doesn't let a lot of things be relayed to the media, what he's feeling either way. He just keeps it level, right? And he's learned that through the years. Obviously, he's also had you know, some ups and downs with media. So he keeps it pretty level. So I thought it was great that he was honest about it, that he let people in on the injury, about what he's been facing, about how frustrating, because that sounds incredibly frustrating. To know that you are right there and just not be able to get the feeling that you're used to, and to not be able to separate what is the injury and what is just maybe a slump, and can you even separate it? Is it all the same? I think that if you're only Manny knows, right? Like whether he should sit a few games or go on the injured list or whether he is right there and go through it, because he's a hard person to put on the injured list. So only he knows. And I think he should do what's best for him at this moment. You know, I know he's thinking, I want to do what's best for the team, but what's going to be best for the team is whatever's best for him.
Does Manny know when it's time to sit? I mean, he knows if he's physically unable to play. We saw it at least a couple of games after the hip flexor injury, but when he's good enough to go out there, he knows I can be out there. Does he know, though, that maybe it might be better off in the long run to take a little more time off? And we talked about on our show, could a 2-week break serve Manny really well and get him back later in the season?
Clearly, the answer is no. This is the way that Manny Machado shows his leadership to his teammates, to management, and to the fans of the San Diego Padres. He is a player that prides himself on playing hurt. We saw it in 2022. He should have taken 3 to 4 weeks for that ankle. He came back in 10 days. And then he played really, really bad for a month and a half before the injury actually sorted itself. And then he played great the rest of the year. He played great before it, great after it, and he played horribly for a six-week stretch while he was recovering. And it's baked into the Manny Machado ethos that you're going to survive those swaths of poor play because, as he said to AJ, my 70% is better than someone else's 100%. Well, not necessarily. You're pretty much at zero F-war for the year this year. So your 70% has been just as good as Eggy Rosario. And frankly, I think the version of the world that we'll never experience where Manny makes his first appearance of the year on May 15th is a version where you would have seen a full health, full strength Manny Machado. He told us the truth this weekend. His elbow continues to bother him.
Woods, is it possible that there's another form of leadership that involves knowing your limitations at a certain point and not having to be the guy that posts every day? Can Manny look inside and see if that could be a possibility to lead by stepping away for a minute?
I mean, it's all player dependent. It's all the era you were raised in. It was all who raised you. You know, your ethos is who you are. And some guys feel that that's all they have, you know. And for Manny, who's not probably the most vocal leader, probably not the most rah-rah guy, you know, the great Crash Davis said, you play the game with fear and arrogance. And I that's how Manny Machado plays. Frankly, I've always been envious of it. I've always been envious of being so good at something that you said, I'm not worried. I'm not at my best, but I'm not worried. Never felt that way my entire life about any, especially any sport, ever. And I've always been insanely jealous to have that mentality. And as far as Manny goes, I don't, he's never, ever going to say, yeah, put me on the IL. Never. And some people give him fault for that. And some people give him credit. And I know the players give him credit. I know managers and former managers, they give him credit. But the fans, man, they want to see production. And I thought when I saw those comments the other day, I go, all right, well, this should help soothe some of the hurt feelings or the anger. It didn't. From what I saw more of like, just go on, you know, go sit. We don't want you here. And I think a $35 million guy that thinks he can play and he doesn't, some people are going to be mad at him for that. It's a bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But if you produce, do whatever you want. Say whatever you want.
I just want to tag off of that because we were chatting before the show started about Jackson Merrill at the end of yesterday's game.
Yeah.
You know, we're a bunch of ballers in here. I'll leave out his expletive. We're a bunch of ballers in here. He was looking around a locker room at Tatis Jr. with his quad taped with ice tape to it. Luis Arraez with his shoulder with ice tape to it. Manny Machado, that his hip's hurting, his elbow's hurting, everyone's hurt. He's looking at the veterans, the moneyed veterans on this team, and they are one and all playing hurt right now. And then he says, we're a bunch of ballers. I draw a line and a correlation between those two things.
No question.
Can we all agree that when Tony Gwynn Jr. comes back to the roundtable, we expect him to be at his absolute best? After having 100%. A bit of a stint here on the
IL,
the non-round,
he's on the TL, the travel list.
Get him back hopefully soon. All right, it's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented commercial free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Did the math. This is the roundtable that is closest to the 81 game mark of the season. Not quite there yet. Padres will get there during the series against the Milwaukee Brewers, but I thought we could do a little mid-season review for the San Diego Padres. And, you know, I always want to spice it up a little bit. So first question is going to be our draft-style most valuable player for the Padres this season. So each of you in turn gets to pick the Padre who had the most valuable first half of the season. But once that player has been taken, you had to come up with the second most valuable, then the third most valuable, and so on for the Padres. Who wants to go first? Annie.
I'm going to go with Jurickson Profar as your most valuable player. Saw today even he went 2-for-4 yesterday. His batting average leads Major League Baseball still right now. He gets to go to the All-Star game. Hope Kyrie gets to go with him and his family. And he has just been invaluable. And he has not let off the gas. And by the way, that knee injury is no joke. That's, I mean, I know he's been dealing with it, you know, and talked about it for a few years, but he talked about the same thing you guys just did. He watched Beltre for so many years, right? And he said this guy would go out there and he would post every single day, and I'm going to do the same thing. And sometimes I think you do have to give your body a rest, but Jerickson Profar has been out there getting it done as much as he can.
They love posting, man. They love it. The big leaguers, they love posting.
So this is why the question is draft style. Does anyone disagree with that answer?
No.
I think we'd all tend to agree.
$1 million, by the way.
We'll just go now around the horn. Woods, you get the second pick in the most valuable first half draft for the
Padres. Like any good draft, I know who the next guy's going to pick. So I steal his draft pick.
Ooh.
That's right. That's how you do it in a draft.
That's fair.
Matt Waldron. Ah. Matt Waldron's been awesome. We just talked about him.
I was going a different way.
Oh, good, good, good. You're safe.
You threw out some wrong smoke signals to throw off the team that was drafting
poker
second.
Tells, yeah.
A guy that has thrown together, what, five quality starts in a row, has been phenomenal, just baffling hitters and reliable and eating the innings that a fifth starter in finger quotes, you dream of a fifth starter being able to eat the innings that Matt Waldron's done. Not only eating innings, giving you a chance to win those ball games every time he's on the bump. What an incredible story this year, watching Matt Waldron pitch and the only guy in the big leagues to throw that pitch, and he's making everybody look silly, including many radio hosts and many fans that thought, get this bum out of here. You know, he doesn't belong in the big leagues, and he has flipped it on its ear.
I think there's one, maybe two more slightly obvious choices, which puts me in a bad position over here.
Screwed.
But Craig, are you going to not go with Matt Waldron?
I have got to go with Robert Suarez because this team would be 6-8 games under 500 if he was an average closer in Major League Baseball. And that just means having three or four blown saves or losses at this point. He's only appeared in one loss the entire year for the San Diego Padres. He has propped this team up. They could very easily be down. I know this sounds terrible, but they could really easily be down in a tier just above the Marlins and the Rockies with all the things that have happened to the key players on this team. Robert Suarez is so valuable because not only, and this is the last thing I want to get to, Chris, like, not only has he obviously been good, but this club faced a real challenge coming into the year of changing culture. And the one guy that you can point to indisputably as a changed culture is Robert Suarez coming into the eighth inning anytime you need, pitching three straight games, coming into tie games, coming in with a lead in the eighth inning to pitch to the top of the order and let Estrada get a save. He has been the most selfless contributor to this team possible.
I might have gone Profar, Waldron, or Suarez, Waldron, like that, but either way, I think those are good three choices. Getting a little tougher now, Chris. Who's the next pick in the Padres' first half MVP draft?
As much as I've loved Profar, I think for valuable, I think Suarez would be number one on my list. But I love Profar. He's been unbelievable, but I agree with Craig. Without Suarez, I don't know where they'd be. I'll take Jackson Merrill then. Again, I'm taking somebody that, you know, has shocked everybody. And I don't think that we've paid enough attention to the 280, and now is it 8 home runs? And on this road trip, they would have been shut out, what, 3 times if he didn't hit a home run? His defense, I can't remember one misplay in center field that stands out as a really bad play. He might have taken a couple of wrong angles, but I haven't seen one mistake. Don't forget, Craig says it. He might be the shortstop next year. This guy's, I'm just so impressed, and mostly impressed with his temperament.
I think the question is, where would the Padres be in center field if Jackson Merrill hadn't stepped up? With the Zokar out there every day, there really wasn't a solution. And somehow they have found a really good solution out of almost thin air.
Isn't it hilarious? Isn't it hilarious that the four biggest question marks were center field, left field, closer, and number five starter? And those are our four selections. So shouldn't this team be 20 games over 500 with all of that?
Except there's the other side.
I know.
All the guys we have not drafted in this draft.
I know.
All right, so that leaves me with the fifth selection here. And I'm going to pick someone who's actually slumping right now. But when he arrived on the ball club, it was undoubtedly an injection of something exciting for the team, a reason for everybody to continue to like pull on the same rope, and that's Luis Arraez, who has been not here the whole year, but just being at that first game at home when he played and had the walk-off winner, it felt like that was a significant moment in the season, and it was a significant addition both in the clubhouse and on the team to know, hey, we're still trying to win. We've got this guy here. Everyone seems to love what he does. He's got a great attitude. He injected something positive, and while he has been slumping a little bit lately, no one's really that worried that Luis Arraez is going into some season-long slump. He'll be back to 3- and 4-hit games before we know it.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, to double up on what I just said from the other angle, we just picked five guys, no Fernando, no Manny, no Darvish, no Musgrove, no Cronenworth.
No Bogarts.
No Xander.
No Bogarts. I mean, so in that regard, shouldn't they be 20 games under 500?
That's exactly right. That's why we're where we are. Yeah. And I just want to note, to cap it, the number two player on the team in F4 is Fernando Tatis Jr. at 2.3 F4, and he's trending to about a 5-win season.
Which is not bad at all.
No, it's great.
He's capable of more than that.
Yeah, we could have put him on the list.
We're halfway through our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Let's look at the other side of the coin then. I'm going to make this a little more positive. We'll go back around this way, Chris. Which Padres player, there's no shortage of candidates, would you expect to have the biggest bounce back in the second half of the season after a struggling first half? Who do you put your chip on that I think this guy is going to, after struggling, going to have a much better second half for the San Diego Padres? This is definitely guesswork here.
Aren't you first?
Yeah, aren't you first?
All right. If you want me to go first, then.
Give me a little extra time.
I will say that my bounce back candidate is going to be
hold for thought.
Pause.
Yeah. I'll go first if no one has one.
No, I want to get this one right. I would like to say it's going to be, I think Xander Bogaerts is going to come back and be, for whatever he's got left, if it's 2 months, I think Xander Bogaerts is actually going to remind us that he was one of the best players in the American League, not for a season, not for a season and a half, but for the better part of a decade, was one of the better players in the American League. We haven't seen it yet. This time off, I hopefully, when he comes back, he'll finish strong like he did last year, and he'll have, obviously, he has the most room to bounce back from anyone, so I'll go with Xander Bogaerts. Chris, after quite a bit of thought there.
Yes, I'll just take the back of Manny Machado's bubblegum card, and we've talked about it plenty, so I'm going to hope for Manny to get healthy and get hot.
I'm glad you took him, because otherwise I'd have to.
You can take him. It's not a draft. You can pick anyone you want.
Okay, well, I kind of like the Bogaerts answer. I'll say, I don't know if he was included on your list necessarily, but I'll say Darvish. I think he's got a really solid chance to.
He's the one who's coming back the soonest, essentially.
Not been the elbow or the shoulder. It's been little things here and there. I feel like he could put together a fully healthy second half, and boy, do the Padres need it.
Woods?
New Darvish. Yeah,
New Darvish.
Straight up. For everything he just said, but. You know, when he's been out there, there have been times of, and that's the frustrating thing, is we've all seen little spurts, even from Joe before he went down. A really nice start before he went down. I mean, there's spurts. But with Joe, you just don't know. You don't know if he's going to be able to come back and be effective this season. The threat of a longer-term situation kind of hangs over him. With you, he's my bounce-back candidate. And Manny probably has – Manny and Xander have the most – ceiling there to get to, and the biggest track record, but not like you, Darvish, doesn't have a really solid track record in the big league.
Yeah, who are you betting on?
I would echo all of you guys. I mean, I think that they're all good choices. I love the Xander Bogaerts pick. I want to see that for him. I think maybe this extended break could be something good for him when he comes back and he's able to mash like he's used to. But I like Manny too. You know what? If Manny's going to give those quotes to Finesand of MLB.com and to Kevin Acey of the UT, and he believes that it's coming, then I'm not going to go against what Manny believes is coming.
All right, so since this is our midseason review, almost 81 games in, usually by this point, a team has an identity. Hey, they're good at this, but not so good at that. They're good at pitching, not so good at hitting. Padres, if you look statistically, kind of defy some of that. So the question is, we'll start in the middle with Craig. What do you identify as the Padres' biggest strength over the first half of the season? What's their biggest weakness over the first half of the season?
The team's biggest strength in the first half of the season has been its ability to hit up and down the lineup for average against right-handed pitching. And the team's biggest weakness in the season has been the absolute and utter inability to hit southpaw starting pitching. And I think it's pretty straightforward. The starting pitching's been up and down. Suarez has been a strength, and the rest of the bullpen has been up and down. So those two things have been consistent. They've consistently hit righties, and they've consistently flailed against lefties.
I do think the back end of the bullpen, if you just look at Suarez and what Estrada did until just very recently, could be considered right now the biggest strength. Teams that are envious of what the Padres have been able to do right in the back end of their bullpen, looking for a situation there. I think weakness has been the consistency in starting pitching. It just feels like, you mentioned it with Cease, he's had fantastic starts, and now he has a stretch where, and while that's always somehow the case with starting pitching, feels like the Padres have had more inconsistency, more guys you can't count on and don't know what you're going to get over the course of the first half of the year.
I would say the number one strength of this team is its uncanny ability to do exactly what we don't expect them to do. I mean, it's uncanny. I mean, it's become almost expected. They're going to end up 81-81. I'm practically convinced of it. I don't know how they're going to get there. They're probably going to get there by winning some more series against the Dodgers and losing some more series against the Rockies. I have no idea what to expect. Home, away, they make no sense. But, you know, that is the one identity of this team, I think, if that can be called an identity. And the negative is this unbelievable inability to not hit lefty starters, and the fact that I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere on a telecast. I haven't seen it quoted in the newspaper. I haven't seen anybody put together a statistic like the one we keep saying on this station. This is mind-bogglingly bad. How has no one asked anyone in management anywhere to comment on this inability? I don't get it. I haven't seen it referred to hardly at all.
We've asked Schilt about it. They don't have any answers. They don't have an answer for it. And I remember when the season started, you know, you go through what you got, and you're breaking down what you got, and you go, oh, we are dead. You want to beat the San Diego Padres, you throw a right-hander, because all we are right-handed.
100%
right. Everybody
said exactly what it
and I was
like.
Panicked. And I'm looking at the thing. I'm looking at the list of left-handed hitters out. I'm like, get David Dahl. He's out there. He swings at lefty. Get anybody. And I'm looking at it now going, I've got no idea what I'm talking about, nobody does.
Annie, I disagree a little bit now. I think it was mystifying early in the season, but now it's not really mystifying. Why have the Padres been so good against lefties? Because Manny mashes lefties.
Right.
Manny's not hitting everybody. Ha-Seong Kim hit lefties really well. He's had not a great first half of the season. And Tatis is the mystifying one because he's not, as Craig said, he's not having a bad year, but he is not hitting lefties very well. Just those three right there together completely changes the Padres against left-handers from an elite hitting team against lefties to one that is now the worst in baseball.
I was just talking to Victor Rodriguez about it last week.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you. And, I didn't see the comments. Please tell me.
It's a different story. we'll get to that another day. Hello. But it is really that. It's that I think there's a belief that because they just haven't been hitting well in general, it's been even worse, obviously, against lefties. But they have good career numbers against lefties. All the guys Ben just mentioned, they're good against lefties. They've been mashing them for years, but they've all gotten off to these terrible slow starts offensively, pretty much, you know, and that's they feel like has, you know, at least added in part. I don't think it's the whole thing, but it's been part of the puzzle of solving these lefties. And as they continue to get better hitting, you know, they believe probably it's going to improve against lefties a little bit more. And I don't think that that's the whole answer. I think that's a theory among other theories of what's been going on. You know, some of it was, hey, we've been facing really hard lefties, which is true.
And a bunch of them.
Yeah, but they've also faced more mid lefties, more okay and average lefties. So there's a little to that too.
Those Met lefties are the ones, you know, Quintana is the one that it just made me, I couldn't believe it. And Manaea in June had a 10 ERA.
And the two A's kids.
And the A's kid, know, yeah. Like, I mean, it's Sears and, yeah.
It doesn't matter who he is. If he's left-handed, ride him in for six innings, one run.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So I just looked
working
it up.
Working on it, guys.
Because this stuns me. So the most home runs by a Padre against left-handed pitching this season, Jurickson Profar is first with 5, even though traditionally he's been a better left-handed hitter than a right-handed hitter. Second, Jackson Merrill with 4 home runs against left-handed pitching. And third, Eggy Rosario with 3. I mean, wow.
Make it make sense.
That doesn't, that's unbelievable. Manny also has 3. Tatis has 1. One home run all season.
Staggering.
Against left-handed pitching. One. That's almost hard to comprehend.
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And that, you know, you're asking Ben about the mid-season report and it's not just mid-season, as your tweet said the other day. You know, what was the record that you tweeted out the other day in the last
350 games or 175 and 175, right. Basically.
It's Groundhog Day. It's Groundhog Day with this baseball team sometimes.
All right, it's time for our seventh inning stretch here on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. As you may have heard, we have a meeting with the CEO later today of Odyssey, who's going to be right in this exact sound space addressing all of us in a town hall.
Will that box be there?
The box will not be there.
Are you cleaning up the pizza?
He's not brought to us by round table.
It's going to smell like 3-hour-old pizza when he comes in.
Can he hit left-handed pitches?
Yes, we might suit him up.
Seems like CEO is a pretty good job. My question here on the round table, what's the worst job you've ever had?
Ooh.
Annie, what's the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, man. We did this one time on our show.
Oh, yeah. That's a great bit.
It's not really a bad job, okay? But I was part of the entertainment stage Scooby-Doo act at the San Diego Zoo. And to do that, you have to put on the Scooby-Doo costume. And that involves, like,
you were the
big
Scooby-Doo
head. I wasn't Scooby-Doo, but I was one of the characters
were
in it.
Were you Shaggy?
My mom needs to find the picture.
Daphne.
Because we rotated all the time.
Daphne. Daphne.
Yeah. But so anyways, it was really sweaty in that. And
were you wearing
purple?
Was it purple?
It was red,
so it wasn't
I feel
Daphne
like.
Then. Okay.
She always wore purple.
I don't know. Yeah.
Woods, what's the worst job you've ever had?
I've heard how long do you have? We've got a million. I mean, telemarketer, that's a tough one.
What was it? Inspirational poster salesman?
Sold inspirational posters out of the back
of
my car, door
to
door.
The fact that we don't have those all over this place.
B2B. I mean,
boggles my mind.
It's one of those things you look back on it now when you talk for a living and you go, I'm glad I was a telemarketer. I learned how to speak and talk and, you know, coerce, I guess. I don't know. Like, I learned how to sell. But man, at the time, you're in there grinding out phone calls or driving around in your car, going into barber shops, trying to sell them a bald eagle that says success at the bottom of it. It was not the most glamorous gig of all time.
There's no I.
No, I answered an ad for like art salesman. I was like, ooh, the art world would be fun at 19.
Wait, and the art was these inspirational messages?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, door to door, business to business.
That's
fantastic. Bro, it put hair on a 19-year-old Woods' chest. It was a difficult, difficult thing to do. It did make you a little fearless, though, and being like, all right, I can walk into this and do this. And I think it's helped me, but it was a crap job at the time.
Craig, your worst job?
Summer, my junior year in high school, I worked at the Lakewood Mall Shopping Center at Soup Plantation. And I really have to bring up both spots, both stations, because they're equal for the worst job ever. The first was working on the soup bar, the actual soup bar, where you've got the 6 tureens
and
of
people
soup.
Like Ben are helping themselves the
and
soup
then just and pouring it all over
pouring it everywhere.
And then just leaving
yeah.
it.
We've done this on the show.
Yeah, and then in,
oh, yeah.
and then in the back you've got the 6 even bigger cauldrons that have the soup that you have to bring in to the front, so you're just constantly getting scalded. Like, you're just getting these second-degree burns all over your arms because you're trying to move and burn, and you're just getting burned. Then I thought I graduated to be the muffin man and to go to the muffin bar, which was much less dirty because you didn't have tomato soup and chicken noodle all over the place. But your burn ratio was now, like,
12 per shift. Like, you really? Will be burned 12 times. Just pulling all the different hot muffin tins out and then cracking the muffins out of the tins. Like, it was just an... So I just came home with just marks.
Just burned.
Everyone's
second-degree burns.
Parents thought that I was like, burning myself. No, I work at Soup Plantation.
R.I.P. Soup Plantation in La Mesa.
I do miss it. I do miss it.
Chris, I'm going to save you for last because my worst job is actually a job you still do, and that was youth basketball referee. Oh. Snuffy. I was reffing... like six-year-olds playing basketball when I was maybe like 12.
And you were 12?
And you have parents.
Were the parents still screaming at
no
you?
No one even dribbles. I mean, the guy takes it, a kid takes it like a running back and runs it down the court like 40 steps. But I can't call traveling just every single time. And then the parents are yelling at me.
I know.
I'm a 12-year-old trying to call a six-year-old basketball game. This is not right. This is not right.
What'd you make per game? Like 20 bucks?
Yeah, like 20 bucks, if that.
That's what I still make now.
Yeah.
Refereeing's tough, but it doesn't hold a candle to my all-time worst job. I'm about to embarrass myself tremendously, but I did singing telegrams one summer.
No, you did not.
Yeah.
One now.
Do one right now.
Absolutely not.
Come on.
I was no older than 19. That is a long time ago, but I had to wear different outfits depending on what the... There was one that was a bodysuit color with a four-leaf clover in the private spots, and I had to strip down to that.
A prostitute?
Was this after dark?
What was this?
Luckily, that one was like. Luckily, that was the it was like an Adam and Eve bit. Luckily, that one was ordered the least. Usually, I just order. Usually, I just did a tuxedo with a top hat.
Is this over in Beverly Hills? Where is this?
I had a big cowboy thing. No, it was in San Diego. It's in San Diego.
Came too late for us, Annie.
I'm sorry, you guys.
I absolutely want to order.
I need to find
someone
out there who once ordered a Chris singing telegram.
There's no way anybody could possibly remember.
How'd you get that gig?
Honestly, probably in the paper.
Did you want to be in showbiz or something? Like, this is
like
with me
in
art?
I think somebody thought that I would have fun and suggested it to somebody. And next thing I knew is it paid fairly decent money. And I got a lot of tips. But it's not a great memory.
Was the audition a singing audition?
I believe I had to get through something, yeah. But I'm not a singer. I mean, the songs did not require you to have, you know, a great voice.
Did
they
you
were
dance?
Mostly.
I did dance.
I'll tell you what I did mostly. I did mostly comedy stuff, and I usually did one magic card trick
that
everybody could see. And then sang my little piece and gave the person their singing telegram.
How long did you do this for?
About 2 months. I think that's about as long as anybody could last in that job.
I got a job working at a tuxedo place. Like, remember where you rent tuxedos for prom and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, they got to bring it back. And
he gave me a van. I was probably 18, 19. Yeah. And he had to drive this van, take these tuxedos to here, drop them off, go pick up those. The first day that I was there, I was wheeling a giant cart of 300 tuxedos on one of those rolling carts. It fell over in the parking lot into like an oil spill, essentially. I picked it up. I pushed it inside. I left it inside the front door. I walked out. I went back. I dropped the van off. I never went back.
You never showed up.
I went there one day. And somebody picked up their tuxedo for prom, and they were like, "What is all over there?"
No kidding.
And I walked into the thing. I pushed it inside. I walked to the door. I started the truck. I left, dropped the truck off. I was out. That was the worst job of my life. It was one day.
I had no idea. What a great question.
Somebody somewhere out there is that tuxedo shop owner. Please call in.
Yes, it was awful.
Here he is.
Awful.
And then they hired out.
Hello, my baby.
Sorry about your tuxedos.
Oh, Ella, what I could do with that story on our show. You have no idea.
So singing telegrams are obviously from a bygone era, which brings us to our next topic, back to baseball. And that's Willie Mays.
Yeah.
A player from a bygone era. Now, Chris, did you remember seeing Willie at all?
I was old enough to have seen him play, but I don't remember seeing him play. I do remember the 73 World Series when he was a shell of himself with the Mets. Although people forget that in his very last game with the Mets in Game 2 of that World Series, in extra innings, he did single in the winning run. So that's how his career finished. His career started with a home run off Warren Spahn. That was his first hit in the big leagues. I was obviously saddened by it. Tears, you know, watching the coverage all week. Just felt like, you know, part of my life had passed. You know, the one thing that, you know, I don't know what else to say about Willie Mays other than the fact that we talk about superstars now, And I think we throw the word around a little too liberally.
We do.
You know, this guy's a superstar, that guy. You're not a superstar unless you're Jerry West or Willie Mays. I mean, these are that superstar.
It's a different echelon.
It's a different echelon. And, you know, it was a sad, sad story. But fun to see all the great, you know, memories. It's a shame that, like, SportsCenter couldn't put together a top 10 Willie Mays clip thing because there just aren't any clips.
Yeah.
You know, you got the catch that he made and maybe a couple of his home runs, but there's – you know, not really enough to show us, you know, what he did.
Does anyone disagree with the comment that Willie Mays was the greatest all-around baseball player in history?
No.
All right, so we all agree with that. Yeah. So it brings us kind of to the last question here. Craig, how do you personally evaluate players from different eras and try to compare? Because the numbers are the numbers, but players today, you know, the pitching is much faster than it used to be. The training techniques, the batters are much stronger than the pitchers they used to face. It's not exactly the same. And in our show, I use the example. If you had a football offensive line from the 1960s and you put them in the NFL today, they'd look like JV players.
Yeah,
does that mean they aren't Hall of Famers? No, they were in their era, but you can't say that they would just succeed today. Would that happen with baseball players, or is baseball a different sport where you can compare two different eras because of the numbers?
No, I don't think – I think you have to do it within the era. And that's why I love the fact that baseball's, you know, stat universe has created things that are controlled for era and controlled, you know, for all the different variables. And that's a way you can compare era to era. But there's no question in my mind, and I know it sounds terrible, but there's no question in my mind that you could field a lineup of all-stars from the 1930s and 40s and put them against a modern pitching, almost any modern pitching staff, and see them completely fail as they see nothing but 98 and 100 miles an hour.
But I do think that if you took a superstar from the 1930s and gave them all the modern training techniques and everything, that would translate to today, Annie.
Completely agree. Once you give them the technology, the resources, the rehab, the everything that these players of today have figured out how to tap into, the driveline type of, you know, places where they can look at every little swing and every little hip turn and what they have over there in the Point Loma pitching lab. I mean, it completely changes things for players and their ability to even come back from injuries better and their ability to play out there. So I agree. I think that's hard to do era to era, but doesn't mean that they're not in their own right, like the best that there ever were.
What'd you say? What's Willie Mays' height and weight was?
5'10", 170.
Would look tiny out there.
Yeah, like Mookie Betts, basically.
Yeah. No, for me, I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things, and especially when it comes to baseball. I love so much about every single era of baseball since I've been a fan. I loved 80s baseball. Loved it. Now, I remember going through baseball cards in the 80s and going, that guy's a pro ball. Like, you would see a couple guys on the Pirates. There's a couple that I mean, there was a guy named Gary Woods, which is my dad's name, played for the Cubs. You look at him, he looks like an accountant. And you, like, look up these guys, and you see these guys that we all grew up watching, and you go, you'd get smoked in today's game. You would get smoked. You'd be embarrassed. Doesn't mean I love it any less. I love that era. I love the 90s. I love the 2000s. I love the 10s. I love the 20s. I love everything about it. And it always bums me out when we talk to the old ball player that is like, baseball sucks now. And I'm like, bro, I know that they're not going to run through you at home plate anymore. But these guys are so good. They're so fast. They're so big. They're so strong. They hit the ball so hard. They throw the ball so hard. I love everything about every era of baseball I've ever watched.
We talk about how would Babe Ruth do today, but the other one, what if you put Aaron Judge and just dropped him in 1930?
Oh, my God.
All of a sudden, they looked at him.
They'd probably arrest him.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, they'd be like, we're burning this guy at the stake or something. Like, this is not normal. This is not right.
Alien has landed at this point. It's
100%.
So
and, or, you know, I mean, throw Jeremiah Estrada against Ty Cobb. I mean, seriously, it would be embarrassing. But it doesn't mean that those guys weren't the greatest of their time. And, you know, we always talk to Flan, and Flan's a dear family friend. I love that Flan used to get his ass kicked. You know, guys were barreling into second base, trying to take him out, and Tempe and those guys. But, you know, sometimes you hear them talk about the game now, and they don't watch as much baseball as more because it's different. I love the differences in every era. It's my favorite part about the game.
Bringing it full circle, though, it seems like Willie Mays, if you gave him a couple of ABs,
100%,
could probably turn around 100 mile an hour.
Yeah, there's no doubt, right? You know, there's
Hank
those guys.
I
agree.
I mean, Willie, 660 home runs, and he lost two seasons.
2 years.
to the war.
You know, I said it today. I said there's two guys whose stats I look at. I'll go back once a year and look. That it blows my mind. And Hank Aaron and Willie Mays are those two players where you go, you slugged what? You hit how many doubles and how many home runs in 15 consecutive seasons? It's mind-blowing.
And that was without all the stuff that they have now.
That's exactly right, man.
One question I've always pondered, and we don't have time to address it today, is Tony Gwynn was always so ahead of his time with the technology. And I wonder if he had access to the everything now, how much better he'd be, or if because everybody has access to it, would he not have the same advantage that he had back in the day using the video?
He's got the 2010 vision, man. When you can see, like Tony could see, there's nothing he couldn't adjust to in this league today.
And he would have embraced whatever the most cutting-edge thing was here.
Dude,
he still would have been ahead of his time.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another San Diego Roundtable Pizza, commercial-free, 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. We'll be back next Thursday after another Padres homestand, which we'll make no predictions about because we have, just like you, no idea what this baseball team is going to do day to day. 3 of 4 from the Brewers. Get swept by the Brewers. Who knows? We just have to tune in and find out. For Annie Heilbrun, Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, and Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your day. From all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. All right, it's time for our seventh inning stretch here on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. As you may have heard, we have a meeting with the CEO later today of Odyssey, who's going to be right in this exact sound space addressing all of us in a town hall.
Will that box be different?
That box will not be there.
Are you cleaning up the pizza?
He's not brought to us by round table.
It's going to smell like 3-hour-old pizza when he comes in
here. Can he hit left-handed pitches?
Yes, we might suit him up.
Seems like CEO is a pretty good job. My question here on the round table, what's the worst job you've ever had?
Ooh.
Annie, what's the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, man. We did this one time on our show.
Oh, yeah. That's a great bit.
It's not really a bad job, okay? But I was part of the entertainment stage Scooby-Doo act at the San Diego Zoo. And to do that, you have to put on the Scooby-Doo costume. And that involves, like,
you were
a
the Scooby-Doo act?
I wasn't Scooby-Doo, but I was one of the characters
in
it.
Were you Shaggy?
Velma? My mom needs to find the picture.
Daphne.
Because we rotated all the time.
Daphne.
Yeah. But so anyways, it was really sweaty in that. And
were you wearing purple?
No,
it purple?
It was red,
so it wasn't Daphne
like.
Then. Okay.
She always wore purple.
I don't know. Yeah.
Woods, what's the worst job you've ever had?
And how long do you have? We've got a million. I mean, telemarketer, that's a tough one.
What was it? Inspirational poster salesman?
Sold inspirational posters out of the back
amazing.
Of my car, door
the fact
to door.
That we don't have those all over this place.
B2B. I mean,
boggles my mind.
It's one of those things you look back on it now when you talk for a living and you go, I'm glad I was a telemarketer. I learned how to speak and talk and, you know, coerce, I guess. I don't know. Like, I learned how to sell. But man, at the time, you're in there grinding out phone calls or driving around in your car, going into barber shops, trying to sell them a bald eagle that says success at the bottom of it. It was not the most glamorous gig of all time.
There's no I.
No, I answered an ad for like art salesman. I was like, ooh, the art world would be fun at 19.
Wait, and the art was these inspirational messages?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, door to door, business to business.
That's
fantastic. Bro, it put hair on a 19-year-old Woods' chest. It was a difficult thing to do. It did make you a little fearless, though, and being like, all right, I can walk into this and do this. And I think it's helped me, but it was a crap job at the time.
Craig, your worst job?
Summer, my junior year in high school, I worked at the in the Lakewood Mall Shopping Center at Soup Plantation. And I really have to bring up both spots, both stations, because they're equal for the worst job ever. The first was working on the soup bar. The actual soup bar where you've got the 6 tureens
and
of
people
soup.
Like Ben are helping themselves to
and
soup
then just and pouring it all over
pouring it everywhere.
And just leaving it.
We've done this on the show.
Yeah, and then and then in the back you've got the 6 even bigger cauldrons that have the soup that you have to bring in to the front, so you're just constantly getting scalded. Like, you're just getting these second-degree burns all over your arms because you're trying to move and burn, and you're just getting burned. Then I thought I graduated to be the muffin man and to go to the muffin bar, which was much less dirty because you didn't have tomato soup and chicken noodle all over the place. But your burn ratio was now like
12 per shift. Like, you really? Will be burned 12 times. Just pulling all the different hot muffin tins out and then cracking the muffins out of the tins. Like, it was just an... So I just came home with just marks.
Just burned.
Everyone,
second-degree burns.
Parents thought that I was like, burning myself. No, I work at Soup Plantation.
R.I.P. Soup Plantation in Larissa.
I do miss it. I do miss it.
Chris, I'm going to save you for last because my worst job is actually a job you still do, and that was youth basketball referee. Oh. Snuffy. Yeah. I was reffing... like 6-year-olds playing basketball when I was maybe like 12.
And you were 12?
And you have parents.
Were the parents still screaming at
no
you?
No one even dribbles. I mean, the guy takes it, a kid takes it like a running back and runs it down the court like 40 steps. But I can't call traveling just every single time. And then the parents are yelling at me.
I know.
I'm a 12-year-old trying to call a 6-year-old basketball game. This is not right. This is not right.
What'd you make per game? Like $20?
Yeah, like $20, if that.
That's what I still make now.
Yeah.
Yeah, refereeing's tough, but it doesn't hold a candle to my all-time worst job. I'm about to embarrass myself tremendously, but I did singing telegrams one summer.
No, you did not.
Yeah.
Do what? One now.
Do one right now.
Absolutely not.
Come on.
I was no older than 19. That is a long time ago, but I had to wear different outfits depending on what the... There was one that was a bodysuit color with a four-leaf clover in the private spots, and I had to strip down to that.
Were you a prostitute? Was this after dark?
What was this?
Luckily, that one was like luckily that was the yeah, it was like an Adam and Eve bit. Luckily, that one was ordered the least. Usually, I just order. Usually, I just did a tuxedo with a top hat.
Is this over Beverly Hills? Where is this?
I had a big cowboy thing. No, it was in San Diego.
In the San Diego. Came too late for us, Annie. We
I'm sorry, you guys.
I absolutely want to order.
I need to find someone out there who once ordered a Chris singing telegram.
There's no way anybody could possibly remember.
How'd you get that gig?
Honestly, probably in the paper.
Did you want to be in showbiz or something? Like, this is
really
want to
be
in art.
I think somebody thought that I would have fun and suggested it to somebody. And next thing I knew is it paid fairly decent money.
I bet.
I got a lot of tips. But it's not a great memory.
Was the audition a singing audition?
I believe I had to get through something, yeah. But I'm not a singer. I mean, it was the songs did not require you to have, you know, a great voice.
Did
they
you
were
dance?
Mostly
I did.
Yes.
I'll tell you what I did mostly. I did mostly comedy stuff, and I usually did one magic card trick
that
everybody could see, and then sang my little piece and gave the person their singing telegram.
How long did you do this for?
About 2 months. I think that's about as long as anybody could last in that job.
I got a job working at a tuxedo place. Like, remember where you rent tuxedos for prom and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, they got to bring it back and...
He gave me a van. Yumigate. I was probably 18, 19.
Yeah.
And he had to drive this van, take these tuxedos to here, drop them off, go pick up those. The first day that I was there, I was wheeling a giant cart of 300 tuxedos on one of those rolling carts. It fell over in the parking lot into like an oil spill, essentially. I picked it up. I pushed it inside. I left it inside the front door. I walked out. I went back. I dropped the van off. I never went back.
You never showed up.
I went there one day. And somebody picked up their tuxedo for prom, and they were like, what is all over there?
No kidding.
And I walked into the thing. I pushed it inside. I walked to the door. I started the truck. I left, dropped the truck off. I was out. That was the worst job of my life. It was one day.
I had no idea. What a great question.
Somebody somewhere out there is that tuxedo shop owner. Please call in.
Yes, it was awful.
Here he is.
Awful.
And then they hired him.
Hello, my baby.
Sorry about your tuxedos.
Oh, Ella, what I could do with that story on our show. You have no idea.
So singing telegrams are obviously from a bygone era, which brings us to our next topic, back to baseball, and that's Willie Mays.
Yeah.
A player from a bygone era. Now, Chris, did you remember seeing Willie at all?
I was old enough to have seen him play, but I don't remember seeing him play. I do remember the 73 World Series when he was a shell of himself with the Mets. Although people forget that in his very last game with the Mets in Game 2 of that World Series, in extra innings, he did single in the winning run. So that's how his career finished. His career started with a home run off Warren Spahn. That was his first hit in the big leagues. I was obviously saddened by it. Tears, watching the coverage all week. Just felt like, part of my life had passed. The one thing that, I don't know what else to say about Willie Mays other than the fact that we talk about superstars now, And I think we throw the word around a little too liberally.
We do.
You know, this guy's a superstar, that guy. You're not a superstar unless you're Jerry West or Willie Mays. I mean, these are that superstar.
It's a different echelon.
It's a different echelon. And, you know, it was a sad, sad story. But fun to see all the great, you know, memories. It's a shame that, like, SportsCenter couldn't put together a top 10 Willie Mays clip thing because there just aren't any clips.
Yeah.
You know, you got the catch that he made and maybe a couple of his home runs, but there's – you know, not really enough to show us, you know, what he did.
Does anyone disagree with the comment that Willie Mays was the greatest all-around baseball player in history?
No.
All right, so we all agree with that. Yeah. So it brings us kind of to the last question here. Craig, how do you personally evaluate players from different eras and try to compare? Because the numbers are the numbers, but players today, you know, the pitching is much faster than it used to be. The training techniques, the batters are much stronger than the pitchers they used to face. It's not exactly the same. And in our show, I use the example. If you had a football offensive line from the 1960s and you put them in the NFL today, they'd look like JV players.
Yeah,
does that mean they aren't Hall of Famers? No, they were in their era, but you can't say that they would just succeed today. Would that happen with baseball players, or is baseball a different sport where you can compare two different eras because of the numbers?
No, I don't think. I think you have to do it within the era. And that's why I love the fact that baseball's, you know, stat universe has created things that are controlled for era and controlled, you know, for all the different variables. And that's a way you can compare era to era. But there's no question in my mind, and I know it sounds terrible, but there's no question in my mind that you could field a lineup of all-stars from the 1930s and 40s and put them against a modern pitching, almost any modern pitching staff, and see them completely fail as they see nothing but 98 and 100 miles an hour.
But I do think that if you took a superstar from the 1930s and gave them all the modern training techniques and everything, that would translate to today, Annie.
Completely agree. Once you give them the technology, the resources, the rehab, the everything that these players of today have figured out how to tap into, the driveline type of, you know, places where they can look at every little swing and every little hip turn and what they have over there in the Point Loma pitching lab. I mean, it completely changes things for players and their ability to even come back from injuries better and their ability to play out there. So I agree. I think that's hard to do era to era, but doesn't mean that they're not in their own right, like the best that there ever were.
What did you say? What's Willie Mays' height and weight was?
5'10", 170.
Would look tiny out there.
Yeah, like Mookie Betts, basically.
Yeah, yeah. No, for me, I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things, and especially when it comes to baseball. I love so much about every single era of baseball since I've been a fan. I loved 80s baseball. Loved it. Now, I remember going through baseball cards in the 80s and going, that guy's a pro ball. Like, you would see a couple guys on the Pirates. There's a couple that I mean, there was a guy named Gary Woods, which is my dad's name, played for the Cubs. You look at him, he looks like an accountant. And you, like, look up these guys, and you see these guys that we all grew up watching, and you go, you'd get smoked in today's game. You would get smoked. You'd be embarrassed. Doesn't mean I love it any less. I love that era. I love the 90s. I love the 2000s. I love the 10s. I love the 20s. I love everything about it. And it always bums me out when we talk to the old ball player that is like, baseball sucks now. And I'm like, bro, I know that they're not going to run through you at home plate anymore. But these guys are so good. They're so fast. They're so big. They're so strong. They hit the ball so hard. They throw the ball so hard. I love everything about every era of baseball I've ever watched.
We talk about how would Babe Ruth do today, but the other one, what if you put Aaron Judge and just dropped him in 1930?
Oh, my God.
All of a sudden, they looked at him.
They'd probably arrest him.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, they'd be like, we're burning this guy at the stake or something. Like, this is not normal. This is not right.
Alien has landed at this point. It's
100%.
So
and, or, you know, I mean, throw Jeremiah Estrada against Ty Cobb. I mean, seriously, it'd be embarrassing. But it doesn't mean that those guys weren't the greatest of their time. And, you know, we always talk to Flan, and Flan's a dear family friend. I love that Flan used to get his ass kicked. You know, guys were barreling into second base, trying to take him out, and Tempe and those guys. But, you know, sometimes you hear them talk about the game now, and they don't watch as much baseball as more because it's different. I love the differences in every era. It's my favorite part about the game.
Bringing it full circle, though, it seems like Willie Mays, if you gave him a couple of ABs,
100%,
could probably turn around 100 mile an hour.
Yeah,
fastball.
There's no doubt, right?
You know,
there's
Hank
those guys.
Aaron, I agree. I mean, Willie, 660 home runs, and he lost two seasons.
2 years.
to the war.
You know, I said it today. I said there's two guys whose stats I look at. I'll go back once a year and look. That it blows my mind. And Hank Aaron and Willie Mays are those two players where you go, you slugged what? You hit how many doubles and how many home runs in 15 consecutive seasons? It's mind-blowing.
And that was without all the stuff that they have now.
That's exactly right, man.
One question I've always pondered, and we don't have time to address it today, is Tony Gwynn was always so ahead of his time with the technology. And I wonder if he had access to the everything now, how much better he'd be. Well, or if because everybody has access to it, would he not have the same advantage that he had back in the day using the video?
He's got the 2010 vision, man. When you can see, like Tony could see, there's nothing he couldn't adjust to in this league today.
And he would have embraced whatever the most cutting-edge thing was here.
Dude,
so he still would have been ahead of his time.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another San Diego Roundtable Pizza commercial-free 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. We'll be back next Thursday after another Padres homestand, which we'll make no predictions about because we have, just like you, no idea what this baseball team is going to do day to day. 3 of 4 from the Brewers, get swept by the Brewers, who knows? We just have to tune in and find out. For Annie Heilbrun, Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, and Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your day. From all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.